We're picking up right here in the lesson.
Patience.
We're talking about patience.
Thanks for understanding.
First part of 1 Corinthians 13, learning about love. I started the recording a little late if you're joining us. He says, "You wicked servant, I forgive you all that debt because you pleaded with me. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" Right? So what's the application if you think about marriage between a husband and wife?
We've had the largest amount of patience
given
to us by Christ, so we should be able to have patience with
our
spouse.
And I think if you see something that your spouse does as very, very difficult to forgive, that's an indicator that we're not truly aware of our spiritual state, right? We don't really understand, like this wicked servant, didn't really understand what the king, what the master did for him, how much his debt was and how much it was repaid. So that is, it's encouraging on one hand, but also a great warning to us in the church, but also in our marriage, against being an unforgiving. It indicates whether or not we've really understood the forgiveness that God's given us. Mm-hmm. Right. And this last question, right? How would you connect patience with self-sacrifice? What are some ways they're related? How is it related to self-sacrifice?
Well, if you've asked your spouse to take out the trash and they keep forgetting, the house at some point or another is going to start to stink.
Yes, it will.
And ideally that never happens, but sometimes recognizing that, oh man, it smells bad, but like, you know what, I'm going to take out the trash, or I'm going to put up with the bad smell until my spouse can get home and we can have a conversation about this. Like, either way, you're going to put up with something that's even at a low level uncomfortable or unlikable, because
so the two self-sacrifices is you could leave the trash and just the house stinks, or you could take it out yourself and do, you're sacrificing your effort and your time. Another way, what's some other ways?
Anger is often a weapon to get people to do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to do what dad says, otherwise he's going to get
angry.
Or other people are trained to act a certain way around you, otherwise you might get angry. But if you're patient, and that's off the table, I mean, there is a sense where people could take advantage of you, where you can't use anger to kind of conform them to your will, and you even withhold like the righteous use of anger, where they deserve, you know, this wrath, and they deserve a talking to for what they did or how they treated me in public.
Yeah, like we see the master in the parable, he showed mercy and that servant just totally abused it. And so that you kind of risk that he could have, you know, righteously punished him and not had to worry about him mishandling. So there's a certain sense of sacrificing the right consequences that person may deserve. Yeah,
there's the opposite of patience seems to be like an immediate act of justice. And so in patience you have to live and be content with a tension of justice not taking a place immediately.
Yeah.
And so there's that. That's kind of a self-sacrificial way to carry on.
Yeah, and you think about that First Peter passage, the righteous are just longing for judgment on the wicked and salvation, but there's a waiting for the Lord's timing, and so they have to sacrifice. The psalmist calling out, you know, they see the wicked prosper, they see righteous suffer, and they're hoping and waiting and hoping and waiting. So there's a patience there.
I think self-sacrifice and patience are kind of, this is in a different way, are kind of joined together in a
accomplishing healthy goals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably because I've probably been listening to these Dave Ramsey reels.
Oh yeah,
right?
That's right.
But
yeah,
you have self-sacrifice. You,
mm-hmm.
you don't grab what you want right now.
Mm-hmm.
You hold back. You join that with patience over time.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to accomplish buying a house,
mm-hmm.
buying a car, or even I mean, think of a change in others or in your children, or I mean, certain degree in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Take self-sacrifice and patience, the time necessary to accomplish those goals.
Yeah, absolutely. One last application I think of is if I have a particularly unruly, rebellious group of high school kids in my class, sometimes, and I've viewed and observed lots of different teachers and their ways of managing the classroom in the past, and you can kind of rule with an iron fist, right? And you kick them out and you tell them, be quiet, you know? And it's like, it's more of an immediate stop, but it doesn't really build anything long-term. It doesn't really solve anything. And so many times there's a long-suffering patient teaching, explaining the procedures, talking about what happens, what you can do, how you can act, what happens if you don't. I always see a big change. So if you think about the school year, I know that the first part of the year is I have to be patient and wait and wait and be very consistent, very consistent. You can act this way, you can talk this way. If you don't, this and this and this happens, but I'm calm and patient. And eventually you kind of get that group and everybody's on board, we're all a team, and then you can do, you have this goal that you've kind of reached, and now, okay, everybody's ready to learn. And there's not really a shortcut way to get there. And I think in our relationship sometimes you want it to happen right now, but that's just not the way change happens. Most of the time it's slow and it takes time and lots of conversations, and you have to bring it up gently and lovingly time after time after time.
Yeah, I think we see that like through each season of our life. Like when we're in college with our roommates, like having patience, because a lot of that is just our own personal preferences.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's being, you know, irritated, or maybe your roommate stays up late or is really chatty, or
mm-hmm.
and it's hard for you, makes you irritable, or
yeah.
they're annoying. Well, it's a reflection of your own lack of patience,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you see that in marriage, when you're living with
mm-hmm.
your spouse, and then with your children,
mm-hmm.
where I feel like when you have a lack of patience, it's often more reflection on
mm-hmm.
like what your own sin is, what you idolize, whether that
mm-hmm.
is quiet time or
desserts.
You know, but it's true. And so like seeing like, okay, my lack of patience in this area is actually an identifier of what I need to put
uh-huh.
off,
uh-huh.
rather than how the other person needs to change.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. I think we often talk in counseling and parenting, we were talking about this the other night, that your anger or your lack of patience can often be very revealing to you, your spouse, or to your kids. Like, what are your idols, right? Because that's, you get upset when they get disrupted. So when you really kind of have that loving patience, you're worshiping and you're seeking the Lord and His glory, and so you're not going to be... you're going to lose that patience when all these other things that you would like don't happen. If it's not convenient, if it's not comfortable, if I have to wake up, you know, in the middle of the night, or whatever it is, those aren't your key goals, okay? And so when those are disrupted, you can continue to show patience, okay? Awesome. All right, number one, that was patience. Let's go on. So love is kind in verse 4. So this is the only usage of the word in the New Testament. That kind of surprised me, right? According to commentators, this word contrasts with patience. And while patience always responds with love, kindness actively initiates. So if you want to underline there, right, look at responds versus initiates, underlining, right? One responds in a sense to how the other person is acting, whereas kindness is a very similar type of action, but it is the initiator. Okay, so let's look at Matthew 5, 40 to 41. Anybody want to get that one? Matthew 5. Andy.
And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles.
Okay. So patience, right, is it's putting up with, it's allowing, it's suffering. So which part of that would be like the putting up with or the patience? You allow it to happen. What happens?
You don't put up a fight when they take your
tunic. They take your tunic and... Okay, right? And then the kindness is the which part?
Going an extra mile.
Yeah, you go... That's where we get the go the extra mile saying, right? So you actively choose to then go more than you're required to do. So that's kind of an example of patience and kindness. So can you guys think of a scenario, one or two, where this is husband and wife, one maybe scenario where you need to show patience, or can you think of a scenario where, okay, I need to show kindness, like that would illustrate the difference?
I'm gonna say, going back to the trash example, they ask you to take out the trash, and also take out the recycling as well.
Oh, mm-hmm. Kindness, going the extra mile, mm-hmm. Okay.
That's assuming somebody recycles.
That's true. What else? What are some examples? Showing patience versus showing kindness. Yeah.
If your spouse is kind of grumpy,
mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, "What's your deal?" You not only
uh-huh.
do, you know, not say that, but you offer to help in some meaningful way,
yeah.
Like, "Let me do the dishes," or
mm-hmm.
"I'll put the kids to bed tonight," or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so there's not, it's not just the putting off of like what's going on, but offering to do something above. Kindness. And like with kindness, it shows, kind of initiates. This is maybe responds. And I think partly, like when we go back to self-control, there's also that issue like, patience is almost controlling your own, like not responding in the wrong way, right? So then kindness is what can I do? You got the grumpy person. And some people might view patience too, where they're just, okay, I'm not going to ask them to do this, or I'm going to give them their space. You're kind of just letting them be grumpy. And then kindness, we are actively initiating something that can maybe help. What are some times that Jesus manifested kindness, maybe not just patience or kindness, but can you think about kindness?
Probably say, I mean, we know more about hell from Jesus than anywhere or anyone else in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes Jesus' kindness and the way that we also are kind, especially to the sinful world around us, is by calling out sin,
mm-hmm.
And doing so in a way that's patient.
Mm-hmm.
But because kindness is an active effort for something,
mm-hmm.
If we truly believe that, you know, those who do not believe are condemned to hell, then kindness means we actively try to stop them from going there. Or at least we actively try to put them in a position where the Lord can do what
mm-hmm.
he needs to do.
Yeah.
I'll never fully understand predestination. That is what it is. Ultimately, I think sometimes telling somebody, I think you're in sin and I think you need to repent, is kindness.
Mm-hmm. And patience alone is an important, that especially if that person is maybe sinning against you in some way, attacking you. Patience is enduring that, not returning evil for evil. And I think sometimes we go through and we are surrounded in our jobs or even in families with people who are ungodly, and we are acting patiently by just enduring. But kindness is then engaging, right? We have a lot of those talks again at the public school. There's a lot of unchurched, lost kids. And patience is kind of enduring and being there among, but then kindness is then actively pursuing to share the gospel, to open up. Yeah.
You brought wine to a wedding.
That's pretty kind. That's
yeah.
Big kindness. Yeah. I was thinking towards, yeah, that's the beginning. I was thinking at the end, you know, it's like he could have called down. So patience is not calling down
mm-hmm.
all the angels to,
yeah.
you know, bring justice, mm-hmm. but then he also says, you know, forgive them, they know not what they're doing. He's actively seeking the good of those who are taking part in this great evil.
I mean, when he sends the legion into the pigs instead of immediately into punishment eternal, that's a little bit of an odd example, but
this is odd.
Where like, because they asked him, like,
yeah,
have mercy on, like, don't send us here now.
Mm-hmm.
So he sends them into the pigs instead.
Yeah. It's hard to think of many of his miracles that weren't an act of kindness, right? Because in every case, like, the people didn't deserve those miracles.
I think even his calling out of Mary when she was kind of bitter about, or sorry, was it Martha? Who was upset. It was Mary who was sitting in this.
Mm-hmm.
And him telling her, hey, like, chill.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's an act of kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes somebody needs to be told that they can chill.
Yeah. So I guess this is maybe a question for me. Is there a way that a person could be patient but not quite reach kindness? Like, what would be something you have to put off if a person's going to be, they're showing patience, but they're not really acting in kindness? What's the thing that you have to put off in order to actively show kindness?
Passivity.
Mm-hmm. You're just going to let somebody else do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or no one does it at all. Right?
I was just going to say bitterness, because sometimes bitterness will make you be like, oh, I'm not going to do it, someone else will.
Yeah.
This kind of goes with bitterness, but just grumbling and complaining under your breath while you're just kind of have this attitude of, I am suffering for this person.
Yeah.
Like, also, like, passive aggressiveness.
Yeah, exactly.
You have man to make sure you may be patient with them, but you may be fearing of acting.
Okay. That passivity, fear of man, it's like there's a lot of things that can cause us to kind of freeze. Yeah?
I think there's a difference, too, between, like, tolerating somebody as opposed to actually, like, loving somebody.
Yes, there's a big difference,
There's a big difference because I know that tolerating can come across as, you know, long-suffering, but it really isn't. Like, you're just, but it's a heart issue, ultimately. Like, long-suffering is you're still kind. You're still showing love despite, you know, suffering.
Yeah.
But tolerating is like, I don't know. It's just like existing.
Yeah.
And it's just like out of obligation as opposed to love.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, it can lead to, you know, passivity or bitterness or anger sometimes if it gets to a certain point.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good to point out that, like, both of these really are necessary and have to exist in conflict. There's some sort of conflict going on between what they're doing or saying or acting and the way you would like to be treated or act, right? And so when we show patience, like, we're restraining ourselves from retribution, from revenge. But if we just do that, we don't actually deal with or address the issue, right? Kindness is that we're gonna actively seek good in this situation, in this relationship.
I was gonna say, a good example of patience with kindness or patience without kindness would be like, if somebody's talking to you about like a topic they like and a topic you don't like, a conversation of patience without kindness, we're just kind of letting them prattle on, like, what's that like?
Yeah.
Whereas the conversation with kindness would actually engage in the would actually engage with the conversation, even if you don't like it. They're like, so what's that?
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what's that mean? What's that do? What's this thing in the corner? Like,
yeah,
in that conversation.
And kindness, keeping that example, kindness isn't always just thinking of them, but also they're good, their best. So then also, how can I turn this for a good, like, a good result, a fruitful conversation?
I think the difference between being patient and tolerating somebody is that if you're tolerating somebody, you're keeping a track record.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're tolerating somebody or putting up with them, but you're adding up all the times they've done this in your head, and
mm-hmm.
you're getting ready to use it someday.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you know, you're not going to be able to be tolerant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That day, you're going to give it to them.
Yeah.
I think with patience, there are times in which it's necessary to bring up something that has happened in the past,
mm-hmm.
but you're not holding on to it like a weapon.
Yeah. And I think one more thing with Josh's example, like with the financial, right, your patient, you think about a person that, like, they want to be patient to buy a home, but they never save any money, right? Patience isn't just waiting, right? It's like looking towards something that you have to work towards to get there. So if you think about in a relationship or in a marriage, if your spouse is doing something that's either sinful or it's not your preferences, it's creating this conflict, patience is not just enduring it forever. There's a sense in which kindness calls you to address and seek to reconcile and to bring a good ending to that, right? You have a goal of peace within your relationship. And so patience, you're enduring it while working towards a good goal in the end. So we have love is patient, love is kind. Then we get into the next eight are negatives, right? So we have, these are our first, put this on. Number two, put this on. And then over here, right, do not, we're going to go to the negatives, right? So these are kind of corrections based on things that he saw, heard about, right? That you should not be doing these things. This is not a loving attitude. So next one, love does not envy. Love does not envy. So we're going to put off envy. So we have a couple passages here. We have Acts 7:9 and James 4:2. Acts 7:9, and the patriarchs, jealous or envious of Joseph, sold him into Egypt, but God was with him. And then James 4:2. Jesse, you want to read that one? James 4:2.
You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask.
Yeah, so we see that used, translated a couple different ways. So we have envy, we have jealous, and what was the other one?
Covet.
So if you think about relationships or even in a marriage, what does that mean to envy? What's a good definition for you?
What's that? One's upbringing could affect other spouse's seeing them. Mm-hmm. Two different upbringings, like I was poor and one was middle class.
Okay, so they have different upbringing, and then their history of what they had growing up gives them different kind of expectations or desires.
Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you're looking at what you have and you want what someone else has, because you're not satisfied with what you have.
You're comparing, yeah. You're not satisfied with what you have, and then you're also, you want what somebody else has. It's a good way of saying it. And is it, it doesn't really say here whether it's talking about physical things, possessions, attributes. So it's pretty wide open as to what it's in reference to. So what are some things, before we come, what are some attributes or abilities or possessions that we can envy or be jealous of in general or of your spouse?
Money's probably a real popular
one. Money's a big one.
Social status.
Social status. Mm-hmm. You aren't satisfied with your own and someone else is getting lots of social attention and esteem. Yeah, yeah. If they're very gifted in different areas, you're like, oh, I wish I had that, right? Mm-hmm.
But I think there's like a difference too between like just being like casually like, oh, I wish I could do that, or you know, versus like it to the point where it consumes you,
mm-hmm.
actively sabotaging. Yeah, basically, or like to where
the difference between appreciating that somebody has them and then actively being jealous.
Yeah, basically, because when you're jealous, you actively hate the other person and you want them for yourself.
Yeah.
And
then
kind of like
you don't want them to have it.
Yeah, and then it like can lead to like bullying and things like that.
Yeah, you kind of hit on this note that, you know, it comes from the root word for there's this strong desire or this zeal, and to earnestly desire something that doesn't belong to you. And the note, MacArthur points out kind of the two forms that you're a little bit like what you're mentioning. One says, I want what someone else has, right? It could be better car or whatever they have. It could be praise. And he says, a worse kind says, I wish they didn't have what they have, right? If I can't have it, I don't want them to have it either. So it's like a very selfish desire, selfish and evil desire,
it's
jealousy.
It's basically like a type of bullying, if anything.
And I think we talked about a little bit ago, like idols. And so sometimes what you are jealous and envious of can often be kind of revealing as to what you value, what your idols are. So if you really are jealous of people because of their social status, for example, why are they getting all this attention? Why are they getting all this praise? It could be revealing that your idol is that you want the praise of men. You want to have that social status because that's what you're recognizing in other people. It's what you're looking at. And so if there's something in your marriage, and you notice you're constantly jealous or envious of this particular aspect that your spouse has, that could be something that you particularly need to repent of. You have some sort of idol that you're worshiping that yourself, and you're looking for that. Can you guys think of any specific things that,
Not to like put down wives, but I think, wives can get jealous of their husbands being able to leave the home and be away from the work and the duties of the home with the children and become very jealous.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that definitely can go both ways. I know that just kind of anecdotally, Carissa and I joke about how if it's been a long day for both of us and she's been at home all day and I've been away from home all day, at the end of the day, what happens? Let's go out. Let's stay home, right? Because we both kind of envy what the other one has. Like, they have something that we don't. And she sees, like, he's able to be gone and be away and do all these things. And I'm like, oh, she's able to be home. And right, it can go both ways that we can just be discontent with our lot, in a sense. And we can just envy the other thing that we don't have, for sure.
I think on another side of it is it can identify areas of laziness where you may be jealous of a good thing that somebody else has, but you don't have the, you're not willing to put the work in to attain it.
Yeah.
Kind of highlight.
Definitely. You just see the outcome and you don't even, you're jealous of that, but not, you're not jealous of all the work that it takes to.
Okay, so we're saying jealousy is a bad thing and to put it off, but we also know that God is a jealous God and that's a good thing. So how do we balance that?
Yeah. So that kind of roots to that strong desire and that zeal. So it's not bad to have a strong desire and to be zealous, right? But it's to, what do we have a strong desire and zealous? What are we zealous for? But let's think about that in the sense of putting on, like you mentioned. What is an attitude, or what are the actions that are the put on? I am not going to be jealous. I'm not going to envy.
Contentment.
Okay. I think that's a big one. And that's kind of an internal, right? You're exercising contentment within yourself.
Mm-hmm. I also think that, like, the word jealous, like, specifically when referring to God, like, God's jealousy, I think it's kind of a bad translation on, like, the English part, because I've heard that, like, the word is more, like, zealous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more like, I love you so much that I don't want you to have, like, an idol, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, almost like when somebody smokes all the time, it's like, I love you, but you need to stop. Yeah, kind of like that.
Well, part of it is that when we're talking about God's jealousy and his strong desires, that God ultimately, it's the same reason kind of behind why God is not it's not wrong for God to be selfish and to seek his glory, because it is the best possible thing for the universe, for every part of his creation.
Yeah.
And because he is the only one who is ultimately perfect and good and righteous, he's the only one who rightly desires self-glorification, because he's the only one that's worthy of it.
Yeah, I see there's a difference between being jealous of someone and being jealous for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if somebody's flirting with Becky, I mean, I'm going to be
jealous.
I'm going to be pretty jealous.
She's
and probably
right,
take
yeah.
some action, yeah. But if, you know, everyone, Becky just gets a lot more attention, people go to her for wisdom, the kids are always wanting to go for her wisdom, not to me, then
mm-hmm.
I might be jealous of that.
Yeah.
Where I want what she has.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that example kind of points out, like, personally, like, towards myself, I want to exercise contentment. And I think also towards your spouse or to the other, there's a sense in which we want to put on gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We want to be grateful for the gifts that God has given our spouse. Grateful for the good things.
I think also humility, because the root of jealousy can be pride. Thinking you deserve it. Like, pride makes you think that you deserve what somebody
yeah.
has to ask.
Yeah, it's hard to envy or want what someone else has when you kind of really understand what you deserve and how you're unworthy and undeserving. Yeah?
I was going to ask, so I didn't quite understand, what does being jealous for someone mean versus jealous?
That you, like in God's love towards Israel, he's jealous for them in that they are his people. He doesn't
yeah.
want them worshiping other idols, going away
mm-hmm.
to other. He gives the example of marriage, that they went towards these other lovers, that they were adulterous people. And so in a husband-wife relationship, being jealous for someone means that I value and love my wife or my husband so much that I care to protect them from all others. They're only for me and I'm only for them.
Because when I was reading it, or when I heard it, I was confused as in for the actual person or on behalf. And that's why I was confused
yeah.
for a second.
Yeah. Okay. So we got through three, only 12 more. So that gives us a little look in the mirror, right? So over the next couple of weeks, just be reflecting on, you can look at all of them over the next few weeks, but we'll be talking about them more. Next week we'll have Easter, and so we'll meet back in a couple of weeks, and I'll just close this in prayer. God, it's a wonderful thing that you've given us in your word, and we thank you for the amazing work of the Holy Spirit that can convict us of sin and can lead us to understand your word, that can plant your word into our hearts, that can prepare our hearts to receive your word and your instruction. And so today we're thankful for the discussion about what love looks like, that it's patient, that it's kind, and it's not envious or jealous. And I pray that this week and over the next several days, you continue to work in us and help us to be patient with ourselves and with others as we daily seek to put off sin and selfishness and all the things that we talked about, and to put on love. And not only love towards our spouse, but love towards one another in the body, and even to love towards our enemies as you've called us to do so. And I pray that you would help us to actively show kindness towards those around us that you've placed in our life, and that you'd be glorified in each and every relationship as we grow more and more to your image. Help us to love like your son Jesus. In his name, amen.